Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Hi there, this is Carol the Coach, and that is the pertinent question. Do you want to change? Are there things going on in your life, individually, or in relationship with a partner, and you're uncomfortable because you have secrets? You have a dual life. And, you know, what do you do about that? How do you get healthy? Well, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I have devoted much of the last 5 years to dealing with sexual addiction. You know, I definitely see it as being epidemic. And I want to help you to get help. And that can be very, very difficult because you don't necessarily reach out to professionals to ask for help. You feel ashamed. You feel like no one will understand. And then I got a little secret to share with you. I have to tell you that clearly there are a lot of individuals that don't understand this issue. And so they will, to the best of their ability, assist you in trying to get healthy, and they don't recognize that there are a lot of supports you need. A lot of supports that you need to actually guide you in the right direction towards recovery. So here's what I promise to do. Every Monday night at 9 o'clock, you and I will spend some time talking about the issues, as well as you'll hear from the experts in the field of sexual addiction, in the field of interpersonal relationships, mindfulness, and marriage. And you're going to hear from these experts, and you're going to decide what you like about them, what you believe, and what you might want to explore. Now, what I mean by that is the experts that I interview most every week typically have a program. They have a book. They have manuals. If you've been listening to the show, you know I've given you lots of free resources that these people have given to you because they want you to get better. Tonight, I have to tell you, I'm excited to be talking with Bernard Baca, PhD, LCSW. Bernard is actually a friend of mine. For some of you that know me from the Indianapolis area or the Midwest, know that I have had many radio shows that were not internet-oriented. They were actually on broadcasting stations, and Bernard always filled in for me. Now, Dr. Baca is this amazing therapist who does something called Imago Therapy, and it is based on the teachings of Harville Hendrix. And Bernard believes that sexual addiction in a committed, exclusive relationship has its significant reasons, and he wants to talk to you about why people have sexual addictions, why both parties need to be present for the therapy, and what you can expect if you work with an Imago therapist. Now, most folks in the United States of America are in a significant or committed exclusive relationship with some other person, regardless of their gender. And why folks do the sexual acting out in their marital couple relationship is one of his specialties. Regardless of gender orientation, couples fall in love with each other and commit and marry each other. Dr. Baca is going to be talking about the effects of sexual addiction and or infidelity in a marriage in the terms of trust, reliability, comorbidity, or co-addiction. He says no one is the bad guy and no one is the good guy in such a relationship. The assumption is that there are couples who marry or pick each other because they're healing old wounds, old childhood wounds. And so he's going to address sexual addiction tonight from an Imago perspective. And you and I both know, if you've been listening to the show, that couples therapy is so important in healing the trauma bonds that occur in sexual addiction. Now, I'm a believer that typically you have to either spend time with a certified sexual addictions therapist or somebody who really understands about trauma bonds. And Dr. Baca is one of those people. I would also encourage you on an individual basis to look into the 12-step programs of Sex Addicts Anonymous, SAA, or SA, because they actually hold many of the keys to repairing yourself in terms of a 12-step program. It's important to have a good therapist, to be in a 12-step program, to have a good sponsor, and to do a lot of the readings that are essential in getting healthy. And so I am very pleased to be interviewing Dr. Baca tonight because he's going to be talking about his view of marriage, why people get together, and what they can do to get healthy together. So I guarantee you this will be a riveting show. And so I'm going to be talking with Dr. Baca. Dr. Baca, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Carol.
Oh, excellent. I am so sorry for last week when we had lots and lots of technical difficulties, and I so appreciate you joining us again this week because you have some incredibly valuable information to contribute.
Well, thank
you. You've been in this field for how long?
Well, I've actually been trained. I was trained by Dr. Hendricks in 1992, and so I've been exclusively doing couples work since then.
And you have kind of an interesting spin on both marriage as well as most of the time you tape your sessions, don't you? I mean, you actually videotape them.
Absolutely. Every session is videotaped and the couple gets the DVD. And part of their assignment is to literally watch the DVD together. But the one caveat is that they can only talk about themselves when they notice something on the video tape. They can only talk about this is what I mean by this or this is what's going on. Can't interrogate their spouse and vice versa.
So it's an amazing way to have some awareness of what you say and how you present yourself and even kind of seeing your wounds as they develop as you're talking with your partner.
Exactly.
Now, tell me a little bit. You know, you believe that marriage is a developmental process that repeats in an adult form. So share a little bit about your foundation for this work.
Sure. In our society, and it's pretty much the Western society, it's that the reason why we fall in love is we fall in love for romance, fun, joy, excitement, etc. Well, that is, if it happens, and it happens at all, it's very short-lived, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Most couples, within a year or two, their sexual attraction, their intensity, so forth, literally goes away. And there is a very good reason for that. There's a biochemical inside of our bodies that when we fall in love with our partner, it gets activated. And it's equivalent to an opiate. It spaces us out. We don't see the problems that they have. All we see is the good parts.
Well,
okay?
And that's interesting because that same chemical is produced initially when people have extramarital affairs or they look
exactly.
at pornography.
Or break up and find another partner.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep repeating that, trying to get that feeling again, like an addict, if you will. But in reality, it's meant to dissipate. And then you start to move into the real relationship as opposed to what your fantasy was.
Well, that makes sense. And so many of my single clients that are looking for love, they look for that chemical reaction. But you and I both know that that doesn't last. And yet
right.
we do pick our partners because we need to work out our own childhood issues. Is that not correct?
That is exactly the bottom line, that we pick somebody who unconsciously resembles our childhood caregivers, whether it's our parents, our aunts, uncles, grandparents, siblings, older siblings, younger siblings. It doesn't make any difference that we are attracted to someone who's going to activate that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't know that's what we're doing, then we're almost doomed to repeat the pattern and be perpetually hurt and angry because the person we thought we were with doesn't turn out to be, quote-unquote, the person who keeps us excited. Well, it's not supposed to be that way. They are the person that's going to help us heal because they're going to remind us of what we grew up with, and that is exactly why we picked them.
Well, and I remember interviewing you on one of my very first radio shows back in the AM days, and you said to me, Carol, people get married and typically experience one of two feelings. And I remember you said they either experience abandonment,
right,
because
right.
so oftentimes we get abandoned
yes.
in our childhood, and then yes. that second issue that they experience is?
Shame.
Okay, say a little bit more about that.
Okay. In other words, for example, we were talking about sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that often happens when people partner up with a sexual addict is they become shocked that the person is an addict, a sexual addict, and they don't realize it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they often feel like they have been abandoned by their partner, okay? And what happens with a sexual addict, one of the reasons why he or she becomes an addict is to help them in their own way think that they are going to actually make themselves feel better because they are terrified that way inside their core there is something rotten. And if their partner only knew it, they would kick him to the curb, so to speak. When the reality is that the person who's acting out, his or her judgment is that they are rotten to the core. And then, in turn, they want to blame their partner. It's your fault that I do this. It's your fault that I do that. It's nobody's fault because you picked that person in the first place.
Right.
And that's
and so,
what people have to realize.
And so you're saying that people are attracted to others that have abandoned or rejected them in their childhood so that they can work this thing out as adults. And sexual addiction
abandoned them
really...
or shame them. Right.
Yeah, and sexual addiction provides that initial medication so that we don't feel, but in essence what ends up happening is that you have to be able to repair that yourself. Nobody is going to be the medication you need to feel better.
Nobody will. In fact, your partner is the person who can help you heal that. But if they get seduced, so to speak, in protecting themselves because they are embarrassed or ashamed or they feel lied to or whatever it is, if they purposely continue doing that and engage in self-protection, they are in fact not going to heal. They have to take the opposite position. And I don't mean that you have to stay married to a sexual addict. But at some point during the process, they must stop doing that. But it doesn't happen immediately.
Okay. Now, you know that stress is very normal in marriage. It is just a part of what marriage is. But you go so far as to say oftentimes it's a repetition of the developmental arrests of each partner. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. For example, in a marriage or a relationship, committed relationship, what happens is one of the partners grew up feeling abandoned based on his or her birth sequence, their parents' own particular proclivities, their own parents' addictions, or whatever it is. And so they ended up being abandoned. They also fall in love with a person who wasn't abandoned in the same way. They were they experienced the same hurt, but they cope with it in an opposite way. And so they partner up with somebody who exudes self-confidence, is very, very exciting, is strong, I can rely on him or her, that sort of stuff, only to discover later on that that person that they're relying on has developed that defense of being super person only to protect themselves from the fear that they're rotten to the core. Mm-hmm. They're not rotten to the core, but that is their fear.
Right, and their belief about themselves, and that kind of belief contributes to sexual addiction. There's just no doubt
about it. Absolutely. That's the core that produces it. So that couples find somebody who is also stuck at the same developmental level they are, it just looks different. So I want your listeners to realize that they didn't make a mistake by hooking up with a sexual addict, but what they did is they picked a sexual addict because they were trying to fix themselves and or sabotage themselves, however they choose to interpret it.
Right. And again, they would not necessarily on a conscious level know they picked this person. As a matter of fact, as you just indicated, they may actually think they have met Prince Charming or Princess Charming in that they exude all the characteristics they're looking for. But ultimately what they find when that dopamine dies down and their reward center in the brain calms down, they realize that they've picked somebody that's either going to reject them or abandon them, and they're going to have to work on their issues to get strong and become healthy individuals.
Yeah, but they do it in their relationship. That's why I only work with couples. They do it in their relationship because each of them has the same injury. They just cope with it in different ways. For example,
so your role is to facilitate that interaction between the partners and help them heal together.
That is correct. The basic assumption is they pick the right person. And my job is to help them see that. Because if they don't see that, they're just going to keep repeating it. And if they have children from their relationships, they're going to injure those children and perpetuate the same injury ad perpetuum. So
they perpetuate that same cycle, and our kids then develop the same issues that they
don't have. Worse.
Or
worse. Either way, it's a repetition, and we leave our children with the same experience of feeling abandoned or ashamed. That's at the core. And underneath every person who is abandoned, they believe that they're going to be abandoned because sooner or later they're really not good enough. So the shame comes into it. So underneath abandonment is shame, and underneath shame, their partner who experiences shame, underneath that is ultimately a fear that if you knew how bad I was, you're going to kick me to the curb, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So in some ways you're saying underneath abandonment is shame, and then underneath that shame is that fear of rejection.
Well, is that not that fear of rejection, that fear that underneath the abandonment is they're being abandoned because they're rotten.
Got it. So that's why you feel it's imperative to work with the couple and not just one person or the other.
Yes, because that person, let's say they are in therapy, in individual therapy, for 2 years to heal their terrible relationship with their ex-boyfriend or ex-husband or ex-wife or whatever.
Right.
And they get therapy for 2 or 3 years. And then next time, maybe they don't find a sexual addict, but they find a work addict or an exercise addict or some other addiction, alcoholic or something, because they are looking for someone who is going to remind them in order to find out, did I get abandoned because I didn't deserve good things in my life, or was it my issue or was it my parents' issue? And you'll come to find out that it's your parents' issue, not to blame them, but to understand where it came from so that you can understand why you were abandoned or you were shamed. And as I said, both members of the couple, the dyad, one has overt abandonment, the other has overt shame. And what the abandoned person does when they experience abandonment is they, unfortunately, trigger the shame in their partner. And the partner who feels the shame, unfortunately, in order to protect himself or herself, triggers the abandonment in their partner. So it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it certainly would be. And, you know, in my work with sex addicts and their partners, we have absolutely a no-secret policy. And when you're working with both of them together, you obviously are promoting that you're not going to hold somebody's secret against the other person. So I love the fact that you include both people. Now, do you ever see one member of a couple for a session or two?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Because what that happens is the partner who is there and
uh-huh.
getting the extra session is invariably the abandoned one.
Okay.
And that very process of allowing them to come in, it activates the shame on their partner, and their partner has more reasons not to continue the therapy. So it is an actual, it's a injury to the ego of the partner who tends to pull away the shame person. So I don't see anybody by himself or herself. So if they call and they make an appointment, okay, I always invite the other person to call me if they would like, but I never see one by himself or herself. It just messes up the whole thing.
Well, and Dr. Bach, I think that's very, very respectful, and it also not only keeps from sabotage occurring and people's core issues coming out immediately, but truly it sets some role modeling for clear and direct communication.
Well, that's exactly the problem. That couples, we think it's about communication, but what makes an interpersonal relationship that is strongly emotional based on marriage or love or whatever, when that occurs, then a person actually regresses to a much earlier developmental stage, and they're re-experiencing those same feelings, and it's as if they never left their infancy or toddlerhood or childhood, because it gets reactivated, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always want to see both of them together because they both have the same injury. Their coping is complementary. And that's really important to know. So that,
well, and I know that oftentimes you recommend some specific Harpo Hendrix reading and maybe even a workshop somewhere along the line. So tell us a little bit about how you do that. What are
sure.
your recommendations when you're working with couples?
Well, with all couples, in fact, there's an interesting thing. The smarter people are, and I see essentially smart people, otherwise I wouldn't be able to work with people who aren't sharp. So I get smart people, and the consequence of that, because they're smart, instead of having 50,000 defenses, they have 50 million. So the paradox is that if you're smart, it's going to be a lot harder to work your relationship out because you're going to have a lot of different ways to avoid connection. And so part of this process is I sometimes see the couples for a period of time, but I always ask them to do a couples workshop. And the couples workshop is a very intense 20-hour workshop. I limit it to 6 couples. I hold them 4 times a year. The fee is $800 for a 20-hour workshop. And people do an incredible amount of work, very, very deep work. It's not group therapy. It's just done in a group setting because that way I can demonstrate and talk about things and kind of then go individually to each couple and let them work together in their relationship in various parts of where the workshop is being held. And it's always held in my home at a different location inside my home than my office. But that's what we do. And so I encourage couples to do both the couples therapy and the couples weekend workshop. I also ask couples to read the book, The Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples book by Dr. Harville Hendricks and his wife, Dr. Helen Hunt, as a primer about understanding why they're struggling with what they're struggling with. And all couples read it before they come in to see me. That's their first assignment before I even see them. And the second thing is they have to do exercise number one in the back of the book before they come in to see me. So it helps them start to see that they are not so far apart than what their gut is telling them. And their gut is telling them that because they have to protect themselves.
Well, that makes sense. And if I tried to do some quick math, you know, you said the workshop is $800. Now, is that per person or per couple?
Per couple.
And you said that's 20 hours of intensive couples therapy within
educational,
a system of group.
It actually moves into therapy. And I work really hard for that 20 hours, and I'm exhausted, so I take Mondays off.
Well, I bet. As well as I was kind of figuring, boy, that means that you're working for about $20 an hour, you know,
right,
with that couple. Now, granted, there's 5 other couples, but clearly they're getting a bargain. Even though $800 may seem like a lot, that's an amazing price for that 20-hour intensive couples workshop. And if people wanted to get a hold of you, and I know you have a website and your telephone number is 317-255-5078, and your website is www.indiana, and then that's -imago.com. So
yeah,
they can look you up.
Right.
Yeah, you want to spell that for them?
Yeah, I-M-A-G-O. It's image with an O. It's the same word as image, but instead of I-M-A-G-E, it's I-M-A-G-O. And imago is just Latin for image. We fall in love with somebody because they remind us of our family of origin. And that's why we partner up, and that's what we're trying to fix.
So, okay, I want to know some specifics. Now, what do you say, do, or how do you intervene with a client in the relationship who has an addiction? And let's just say a sexual addiction, since that's the core people that are listening to the show tonight.
Right. Well, I'm, this is all paradoxical. But whatever the problem is, it's not the problem, if that makes any sense. Okay.
Well, it does to me, but explain to my listeners what you mean.
Okay. That means that if a person is using drugs, alcohol, food, sex, internet porn, anything else to avoid the relationship, okay, that they're doing that for self-preservation, for self-protection. The irony is it's not occurring. It doesn't do that. It actually deteriorates the relationship and deteriorates their self-feelings towards themselves. Okay? So I never see the presenting problem as the problem. So they will not come in and say, well, what's the problem? Because if you do that, the first thing that will happen is they'll have the same argument that they have at home and nothing will be different.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't ask them what their first issue is. What I ask them is, when did they first notice their partner, and what was it about him or her that they noticed? So what it boils down to is I never allow the person who calls up and sets up the appointment, the maximizer, or the one who has abandonment issues, to go first. Because if you do that, all they're going to do is essentially say that their partner is at fault. And eventually, no partner is going to keep coming who keeps feeling blamed.
So you do a real good job of teaching couples that really there is no good or bad guy, that they're perfect for each other. They just have to figure out how to heal the wounds so they really can then meet their own needs and each other's.
They and everything that they love about their partner or hate about their partner is really inside of them. So that when one realizes that your partner is just the embodiment of everything that you love and hate about yourself, then that puts things in a different light entirely. As Shermie gave me a funny on the New Yorker one time. Shermie's my wife, and it says, this man's talking to his wife, and he says, you remind me of everything that I don't like in myself. And that's essentially what happens in couples. We don't pay attention to the bad parts when we're in that stage. It's not just adrenaline or anything else. It's literally phenylethylalanine, PEA, that goes through our system when we fall in love, and it spaces us out just like getting morphine if we had a gunshot wound. It spaces us out, and we don't notice the parts of our partner that are irritating us. Even though they engage in behaviors that when we're first dating them or first married, it irritates us, but we don't pay attention to it. So my job...
Go ahead.
Well, my job then is to help people see that they picked the perfectly correct partner and to learn to have faith in that. Not hope, but faith.
Mm-hmm.
And faith is, I don't know how it's going to, how it is that way, but it is what I picked, so I want to let it play out. And whereas hope is, I want it to be a certain way, and nothing ever turns out to be a certain way. At least that's been not only my experience, but there's been lots of people who've talked about that throughout their life, that nothing is the way they thought it was going to be.
Okay, so let's just say that you've got a sex addict, and he happens to be male, and he's into pornography that degrades women. And,
and he's partnered with her. Let's say he's partnered with a woman. You can do two gay men. It doesn't make any difference. But let's just, for the sake of this particular instance, he's partnered and she's threatening to divorce him because of his infidelity and his sexual addiction. So what I do is probably his wife will call and set up the appointment.
Uh-huh.
And what I do in the first session is not let her talk about the problem, but get him to talk about why he fell in love with her. Now, what that does is it starts to get their old brain, and that means the part of their brain that is in the emotional or limbic system, to feel good again about each other. And you got to start feeling good with about your partner and not angry or hostile with him or her in order to have good feelings occur, and therefore you're not in a pitched battle.
Well, and I like that because my experience has been that the woman who makes the call is deathly afraid that she's been rejected, and that's why he's gone to pornography or other affairs.
Really?
And so she tries to ultra control this person. She wants to look at all his history, and she wants to know everywhere he's going, and she may want him to take pictures with his iPhone to prove that he's really where he says that he is.
And what she's doing is, in order to stop herself from being abandoned by her partner, she's actually shaming him and making him feel inadequate. Probably in the same way his parent or parents did to him when he was a little boy. That he ended up marrying or falling in love with somebody and marrying somebody who's controlling him exactly like his mother, father, grandmother, whoever took care of him as a child. And she is trying to put some limits because she is saying, I don't want to be abandoned. And when I was a little girl or a little child, I got abandoned regularly. So by darn, I'm going to try my darndest to make sure this time I don't get abandoned. And the very thing that they're doing is producing the very thing that they're afraid of. So she's setting him up to reject her, and he's setting her up to reject him. That's what they're doing, and they're not aware of that. My job is to help couples become aware of what they're doing and then try to figure out, why would they want to do that? Why would you want to have your wife shame you? Okay? And what do you think your addiction is about in you? Not about her. It's about you. What is it? And then, after he says it, and I get her to do the dialogue, which is mirror, validate, and empathize, once I get them to start doing that, then I ask her why she would have been in love with somebody who looked so good and yet was so tarnished. And she'll find out, hopefully, in this process, that she picked someone who's going to abandon her because she doesn't deserve to be loved because her brother got the attention, or her mother gave the attention to her little brother or little sister, or somebody got it, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. And so what she's trying to do is assert control over something to try to fix what happened to her, and yet she's setting it up to repeat that same abandonment.
Well, and that makes so much sense, because in her over-controlling him, she's also shaming him. And I know that I get a lot of partners that say, I deserve this. I was bad. I have caused this. I have created this. And so they continue to want to stay in that role. And so I like the fact that you've really introduced, hey, what did you love about each other? What was the initial attraction? And you try to reverse some of the pathological feelings and pain.
Yes, and so I say to him, why would you want to be so bad? You picked her because you loved her. You talked about how wonderful she is. Why would you want to do stuff that's so bad? And ultimately, you'll get him to say, because I'm rotten to the core. Now, why are you rotten to the core? Because when I was 2 years old, I remember my first memory was being in my crib and nobody was there. And I was completely all full of urine and feces, and nobody changed my diaper, and I was freezing, and I got left, and I said to myself, I am never going to be in this position again. Mm-hmm. Then you get him to do that. As soon as he touches that part, what happens a lot of times is they become very tearful. And not tearful of saying, oh, I'm a horrible person, tearful about feeling empathy for that little baby or that toddler or that young child that got shamed into feeling that he was not good. And when that happens, the partner is able to empathize too, because guess what? It happened for him or her also.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Now, for our listeners, you know, empathy is not sympathy. Empathy is being able to put yourself in another person's shoes and understand how they feel. And empathy is a very valuable part of working out any kind of sexual addiction.
That is correct.
However, very clearly, sometimes there's this pathological empathy, because this man will empathize so much for his wife that he believes that he needs to stay in that shame position. So as a facilitator, you work him out of that and work her out of that.
With her. That's
right.
Not me doing that. I will help them do that. So eventually when he can say, what I need from you, my spouse, is this, this, and this very concrete stuff. Now,
like what?
Well,
like
for example, say, I need you to say that you love me every day.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to say, gee, I like the way you did your hair. Or I thank you for getting the coffee. Or little tiny steps of appreciation. What that does is it lets their partner know that they are valued, and it also stops each person from starting to defend himself or herself.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I teach people to do, whatever their partner says, you just mirror it. I don't want you to argue about it. I don't want you to say, I don't want you to say, no, that's not true. Anything else, I want you to take it in. And they both struggle with that. So it's not about one person who is the problem and the other person who's the good guy. It just doesn't happen that way. People get the right partner. My job is to help them realize that, to make it conscious, as opposed to continuing the unconscious part that causes them to be in pain.
So you're talking about these tools. You mentioned dialoguing, and you talked about mirroring. And so would you share just a little bit about what each one of these tools are?
So you would like me to share what each of the tools are. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Dialoguing and mirroring.
Is there more you'd like to tell me? That's a demonstration of it.
Okay.
I just said back exactly what you told me. And that's what I want couples to do, is to say exactly what their partner says. So, for example, if a partner says, what do you want to go, what would you like to have for supper tonight? The other partner says, I hear you saying you want to know what I would like to have for supper tonight. Don't answer, just mirror it. Because the message is, you stop asking your partner and then holding it against him or her for what they said and say what you need. Doesn't mean that their partner is going to say no or anything else. It's just that people have to take responsibility and say what they need.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. You know, so many partners will ask a question, what do you want, where do you want to go for dinner? And then they get aggravated and frustrated when the other person doesn't give the correct answer.
That is correct. And that shames their partner. And then they feel, the person who gets angry feels abandoned. The other person feels shamed, feels like it's a bait and switch. So what you do is you get couples to stop doing that, at least in the office.
So how long would you say your couples therapy lasts?
My couples therapy, if I do it from beginning to end, takes about 2 to 3 years to do it completely.
And is that weekly? Is that a couple of times a month?
Every other week. Every session I have is for an hour and a half, and generally they're every other week. Now, at the 2 or 2.5 year point, a lot of times couples start to go once a month or once every 6 weeks or once every other month, and then eventually PRN whenever they need it. And so sometimes people come back 2 or 3 years later and say, you know, I fell off the wagon, so to speak. We need to continue talking about some stuff, and we need your help to negotiate this stuff. It's not really negotiation. It's that I stopped dialoguing with my partner, and my partner stopped dialoguing with me, and all we did was attacking each other. We got in the same pattern that we did before. And human beings get in patterns all the time.
And what I really notice is that what you're talking about is you're teaching couples how to attach to each other. And truly, with sexual addiction, there's usually trauma bonds and attachment issues. And so when you're working with somebody 2.5, 3, 4 years, it really gives the couple enough time not only to utilize the tools, but to start using them regularly and form that attachment that they never really had.
That is
because
correct.
They attached to the wrong thing.
Well, they attached to what was there.
Yeah, the image or the imago.
Yeah, they attached to what was there when they were children. We don't have a choice. We attach to the parent we have because the alternative is to have no parent, which means death. So we attach to the parent we have. The problem is we think maybe they didn't treat us the way we needed to, because we needed it, because there's something wrong with us. When it had nothing to do with us, it had to do with our parents' own childhoods when they were kids because of what our grandparents did. And our grandparents did what they did because of what happened to them with my great-grandparents. And it goes back generations. And all you have to do is become conscious so that you don't repeat the same pattern. That's very hard to do.
Do you ever run into one or both partners who can't forgive, or, for instance, a partner who can't forgive him or herself?
Eventually, I wear them down so that they can forgive themselves. they're not forgiving themselves because it's their way of perpetuating a rejecting cycle. In other words, it has to do with their fear that they truly are lovable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So people repeat the, I can't let go of that because I'm so rotten. They're doing that because they don't believe they deserve anything better. And the reality is they do, because what happened to them wasn't their fault. As kids, as little kids, not as adults. What we do as adults, it's our responsibility. But what we have to do is see what this pattern was based on in order to change it for our life and our partner's life, and also for our children's life. And I will tell you this, when couples start to get it and they start really, really relating to each other, their kids straighten out too. It's amazing. So that if their kid was having problems, they start to straighten out and do really well.
Family systems issue. I mean, when the adults get healthier, so do the kids.
That is correct, right. And parents start to notice that, and they say, and they do that even with adult children, children that have been out of the house. The adult children often say, you and mom seem to be different. What is that? What's going on? And they'll tell them, and they'll say, oh, wow. And they'll say, geez, I really like that. And the parents will start to say, well, it's worked really well for us. And this is what I did, and I'm sorry that I hurt you, but it wasn't your fault. I was blinded, and now I'm not blinded, so I'm changing it. And that's what has to occur. It's about
being kind. I can see where then parents who obviously have learned how to do this with each other then use some of the same tools, the dialoguing and the mirroring and the empathy with their kids, and validate their experiences so the kids don't grow up to be so wounded. So I am talking with Dr. Bernard Baca, and he is in the Indianapolis area. And if you are interested in getting with him, you can either reach him at area code 317-255-5078, or you can look at his website, which is www.indiana-imago.com. And you can get a hold of Dr. Baca there and explore what you and your partner would need to do to get into couples therapy. You've heard him say that he expects you to read a book and do the first exercise and then come together for all sessions. And it really can be effective in decreasing sexual addiction, because once somebody feels understood and has been able to work through their trauma, they no longer need the addiction to medicate their wounded self. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And it occurs in tandem, because the other person has his or her own addiction, but it's not a sexual addiction necessarily, but it's an addiction to something else, an addiction to perfection, an addiction to fear of abandonment, an addiction to something, okay? And so that the person who is the identified sexual addict is not the problem. His partner is just as hurt and wounded and suffers from the same sort of psychological pain that the addict does. It's just not conscious. It's not overt. So it has to be brought out that they are just as addicted as their partner, and their partner is just as whole and healed as their partner. So that's what happens, that nobody's better or worse than the other.
Now, I got to ask you, because certainly in this scenario, oftentimes there is so much shame for the sex addict that he or she comes in and feels like they should be the focus of therapy. And what I hear you saying is there is no good or bad person in this relationship. Everybody picked somebody perfectly to work through their own issues. So do you ever get somebody who absolutely refuses to believe that they've contributed to the issue?
I have had that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them will not come to see me in therapy if they have that belief. They will have divorced or split up or done something before they came in to see me. So,
well, that makes sense, too.
I don't have people who are, say, you know, it's not my fault, it's all his. They would have split up and broken up long before they came to see me. The ones that come to see me at some level want it to work. They're just terrified because they don't know how to do it, and they're afraid, more importantly, that they don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm. So my guess is you never provide any court testimony or anything that would incriminate one person.
Never. And I make that clear. No, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Because neither one of them is the good guy or the bad guy. They deserve each other. My job is to help them see that. So I don't go to court. I don't say he's a sex addict and she's a poor victim, or she's the sex addict and he's the poor victim. No, I don't do that. Everybody gets the partner they deserve. My job is to help them understand why they did it. And why they did it is not to be miserable, but to recreate the same experiences and feelings that they had as children, little kids, in order to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Just like, go ahead.
Well, it's just like a child. When you are feeding your toddler and they grab the spoon out of your hand and they give it to you, it's because they want to feel like they can contribute. The same principle. If you have one person that's the bad guy, then the other person is automatically the good guy. It just doesn't happen that way. Everybody wants to be able to feel that they are legitimately competent, and I don't ever side with one versus the other. It never is helpful, and especially if there are children, because the children are the products of both of them, and therefore they leave the message to the children that there is something flawed in them. For example, you're like your dad, and I divorced him, so the kid knows that and feels and has to protect himself or herself. Or you're just like your mom, and the kid knows that and has to protect himself or herself. That's why if I can get the parents to learn how to truly communicate and truly develop empathy and give to their partner unconditionally, then it changes the dynamic of the whole family. It's amazing how that happens.
That totally makes sense. Now, as we begin to end for tonight, I'm curious. I heard you say that you tape the sessions, and do you insist that they watch each other or watch the video, or is that something that's voluntary?
Well, it's theirs, and they can do what they want because, you know, we're all adults. So I say, I really want you to do that, to read it, but I'm not Sister Rosetta Stone that's going to bring them up to class if they didn't do their homework. Mm-hmm. If they watch the DVD together, they will learn a great deal, and they will be well on their way to healing. The ones that don't watch it, it's going to be slower. And I
tell
them.
And I certainly have referred people to you that say they had no idea how shaming they were until they saw themselves on video. They said, oh, my gosh, I was so self-righteous, and I just didn't know I came across that way until I saw myself pointing my finger and doing all sorts of things that we really don't know until we get to watch ourselves. So it really is an incredibly valuable tool, as is the book, which, boy, I'm telling you, that book is some intense reading, Getting
yes.
the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks. And you said also
Helen Hunt, Dr. Helen Hunt, his wife. It was a co-development, but when Harville first came out, 25 years ago with it from 1988, they set it up so that it was only his development, but it really was a co-development. And he finally realized that he injured her by not including her as co-developer. So the latest edition, they're both in the front of the cover and they both did it. So it's really about them both co-creating that.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting that, you know, we're always gaining new insights. The more evolved we get, the more empathetic, the more we realize how imperative it is to include our spouse in so much of what we do because they have helped us get to the place we need to be. So your work is amazing, and I wish you the best. Again, I'm talking with Dr. Bernard Baca, who is a therapist in the Indianapolis area. His website is www.indiana-imago.com, and his telephone number is area code 317-255-5078. And it sounds like you're 100% comfortable working with addicts of any type, because ultimately that's not the issue you work on. You work at the core wounding underneath the addiction.
That is correct. That's absolutely right. And it's wonderful. It's exciting. It feels like it's a very powerful experience.
Yeah, I bet. Thank you so much for being part of the show tonight, and continue with your work, because it really does equalize a couple, and that is so important in the evolution of a relationship. So I so appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much, Carol, and I appreciate the invitation to be on your show.
Okay, well, we'll talk soon.
I hope so. Have a good night, and good luck to your future, too.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye.
Yes, he's an amazing therapist, and he certainly works diligently to make everybody feel comfortable and where there's no blame or shame. Any of that stuff just points to what we need to work on individually. And, you know, I'm here to tell you that when I was single, and I was single until I was 44, I would study with Harvo Hendricks, and he made this statement about you can be individually, you can be unmarried and have a great individual life, but truly to do the interpersonal work that we all need to do to evolve requires that you be in relationship with somebody, because that's when you get to your core issue. And I absolutely believe that to be true. Now, I know I've got listeners out there that have been in divorce situations or separated from their husbands or their wives. Maybe they are lonely and they don't have anybody in their life right now. That is absolutely okay. You keep working with your individual therapist, your certified sexual addictions therapist. See if you can't find an Imago therapist in your area. You know, you can just Google that, I-M-A-G-O, and then your state, and certified Imago therapists will come up. And you don't have to be in relationship. You just get to the meat a lot quicker when you've got somebody who's mirroring in a unhealthy way some of the things that they're feeling from their childhood. So I highly encourage you to not get discouraged, but know that you are worthy of getting healthy, beating this addiction. As I started talking to you at the beginning of the show, oftentimes it takes a lot of tools to do that. And so I can't emphasize enough that 12-step program that is available in almost every state, in every country in the world, is there to help you redefine who you are, know your character strengths, know your character defects, and give back. And that 12-step program allows you to do that. And if there is not a 12-step program, an SAA group or an SA group in your city, you can always call a telemeeting and be a part of a bigger community across the world. And if you want, you can download my show on iTunes. Just put in sexual addiction and or Carol the Coach, and you'll either get my Live Your Best Life series, which is about 2 years worth of internet radio shows, or over a year of sexual addiction programming specifically for you. So thanks for listening to the show. We have Michelle Rappaport, who's going to be talking about sex, love, and relationships with attachment traumas next week at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And if you need me, you can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com, or you can go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, or carolthecoach.com. Have a great week. I'll see you back next week, the same time, for another expert and some more dialogue. Have a great week.